From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
We put a high income tax on successful people, business owners, small business owners. Many more will leave, many more than have already been leaving. And it'll be devastating to our tax base.
The goal was to make it bipartisan. When you do something as large as changing tax policy, you want it to be bipartisan. And we had 3 to 5 Republican members who were ready to vote for the bill. And, you know, Bruce Rauner sort of reached in and turned off the switch. And that was the end of the proposal. So, you know, we'll keep fighting on this. But I'm deeply disappointed. I think the voters and citizens are, too.
That's Representative Christian Mitchell, a Democrat. Before that, Republican Governor Bruce Rauner. As you heard, they did not agree on the graduated income tax idea. It failed to get approval. So if you're a fan of the flat tax in Illinois, you can be happy it's staying in place, at least for now. Changing it would have meant changing the Constitution in the state. So voters will have a chance to weigh in on some other proposed amendments, and we'll talk about those. Also, will there be some more money going to colleges and universities? And what about social service agencies? Some of them are taking the state to court. In Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford. Also on our panel today, Amanda Vinicky, State House Bureau Chief for Illinois Public Radio, IPR reporter Brian Mackey, and our guest today, Ivan Marino. He's the Bureau Chief with the Associated Press. Ivan, good to have you on.
Thank you for inviting me.
And let me start with you. Can you explain what those who backed the graduated income tax idea were hoping to do, what they wanted to accomplish?
Well, it was two pieces of legislation. One would go to voters to ask them to change the Constitution to eliminate the flat rate tax that Illinois currently has, meaning everyone pays the same income tax rate. And that would allow them to set a graduated income tax, which would tax people based on the income that they made. So the more money you made, the more you would pay. So-called millionaire's tax, because people who made more than $1 million would be paying roughly 9.7% income tax, which would be a huge increase from what they pay now, which is 3.75%.
And Amanda, let me go to you on that. When you're talking about that much more money for certain people, that's certainly different than what Illinois and people in Illinois have been used to. But this idea of a progressive tax or a graduated tax, it's been out there for a long time. Other people have favored that. I think Pat Quinn favored that idea as well. It seemed as though they were getting more momentum on it. What happened this time?
It did seem as if it was getting momentum because, as Ivan pointed out, it wasn't just a constitutional amendment that vaguely had the change in the Constitution that would allow Illinois to move from a flat to a progressive rate, but it was the accompanying legislation designed to give a tax cut to your average middle-class family. And so really, that high rate that Ivan noted for the millionaires in Illinois, they were the ones that were going to be paying out of pocket and seeing the increase. There was a whole chart with a bunch of families, and most individuals, they, as I said, 99% of tax filers, according to supporters, would have seen either a flat tax or paying less to the state. And so that, of course, is something that politicians would be able to sell to voters. I think that's part of what gained traction here. And it also gained traction because we are at a point where you have even many Republicans openly saying that they recognize Illinois does need to look to revenue. So if you're a politician and you're thinking, all right, at some point I've got to vote for a tax increase, maybe something like this would be easier for people to stomach. They could promote it as, you know, a millionaire's tax. But of course, what sunk it was what we heard from the governor there. And the governor does have a very strong hand with Republicans, and he pressured them, is what we are hearing. His office hasn't said that either way, to vote against it. And this is something that Democrats, despite saying, hey, this is something that voters might agree to, might be able to stomach, didn't want to do it on their own. And thus, Mitchell never even called the constitutional amendment for a vote.
And Brian Mackey, let me ask you on this, because this seems to me to be one of those cases where you can make an argument, maybe this was Democrats trying to, you know, poke at the governor a little bit. The governor, he is one of those millionaires, multimillionaires, and he might be somebody that they wanted to sort of target with this. At the same time, I find it hard that 99% of the people might get a tax break, and yet people don't want to vote for that. What's the deal there?
Yeah, well, I mean, it is something that polling – there was a poll that came out that showed it was pretty popular statewide. But I think that, there's also this problem that a lot of people just don't like voting for anything having to do with taxes. We've tried to have tax reform movements in Washington, and people have talked about that in Springfield, that the system is arcane and it needs to be made more simple. But it's just a very difficult vote. Anything having to do with taxes stirs up so much emotion among the voters and just makes politicians very nervous. And of course, those rates, I mean, as Amanda pointed out, this companion bill to the constitutional amendment would have set rates relatively low. Most people would have seen a tax cut. They specifically said they were not trying to solve the state's budget problems by using this tool. On the other hand, that was just a proposal and a suggestion. And I think the fear would be that, well, you know, boy, things are a lot worse than we thought they were. And, you know, if this were to go through, and then maybe tax rates could be increased for everyone.
Now, of course, when we're talking about, you know, raising taxes, even if it's on a smaller percentage of the population, like you said, that's not always an easy thing to do. What the state constitution lays out is the flat tax. It says that, you know, basically everybody's taxed at the same rate. That was what would have changed. The rates were something that would have been put into effect, and they started being talked about to get this momentum, to get this thing on the ballot. But the rates were not really part of the idea of changing the constitution. They would have not have been locked in. Now, Amanda, when it comes to raising the income tax in the state of Illinois, that could still happen. The rate could go up or down, and that could even happen this year while they're still in session. Is there any momentum on that besides people saying, yes, we may need to bring in more revenue at some point?
You know, there are continued discussions in private, so we aren't privy to them, but we're aware that they are going on about what the governor has compromised, or has called a grand bargain, a sort of compromise. And there are supposedly talks about revenue increases included in that. But as you noted, of course, now it does need to be flat. I presume that you'll have Democrats voting or pushing for something along the lines of an earned income tax credit to offset that for the people who are at the lower income bracket there. But what tax hike they are potentially talking about, I don't know. And just even how productive these legislative and working groups are, it is noteworthy that they're happening. That's happened in sort of fits and starts on an informal basis. And then there's also one with kind of the budgeteers or the appropriations committees. But, you know, I have to say, walking into the Capitol the other day, I actually ran into Speaker Madigan and asked him, you know, what do you think? How are these going? And the speaker said, from what I hear, how about you? They're just getting lectures. And that is a lot of what we've heard, actually, that there's not a whole lot of talking going on, that in fact there's a budget director that is speaking to the chairs of these various appropriations committee and kind of telling them the basics that they say they're well aware of.
I'm sure the speaker would be the last to know if something is actually taking place right? So now we spent some time here talking about something that will not be on the ballot this fall, but apparently there will at least be some things for people to vote on that could change the Constitution. Can somebody give an update on that?
Yeah, so the Constitution, first of all, as we're taping this program, actually, you have a citizens initiative turning in signatures they say should be more than enough to get on the ballot a redistricting measure. There could, however, be a legal battle ahead, as has been in the past. They did change the wording from what it was a couple of years back in an effort to try and make this fit what a judge deems okay by the Constitution. So voters may see a redistricting constitutional amendment on the ballot. And then whereas the General Assembly said no to either eliminating the lieutenant governor's office, a couple of redistricting packages, that graduated income taxes we've talked about, merging the comptroller and treasurer's office, that's something that's been talked about before. None of those either got traction or got voted down. But instead, what will be on the ballot and was ratified would be a quote-unquote lockbox for transportation funding, and that's after lawmakers have continually dipped into the road fund when budgeting gets tough. They, instead of paying for infrastructure, use it for other needs, and the labor unions, Chamber of Commerce, engineers, et cetera, got sick of that. And so they have put forward, and it was politically palatable. It did pass something that will ask voters, hey, let's leave transportation funding alone.
And that seems like something that could gain a lot of support, especially if these groups are behind it, put some money behind a campaign to get people to understand what it's about. I mean, that's always an issue, especially downstate, is raiding the road fund, as they like to say.
Yeah, and certainly, I mean, that's something that, as Amanda pointed out, it's been dipped into quite a bit in the past, and there are no end to government reports and interest group reports talking about our crumbling infrastructure, right? We bridge every few years somewhere in America, a bridge collapses, some people die, and we start talking about how we need to really, we have 100-year-old water mains that are bursting in places, but this is not something that's in public consciousness all the time, but when it does spring into it, people suddenly get interested in paying for these sorts of improvements, and so this money would be locked up there. It is interesting that, you know, we've seen the governor, as he's tried to sort of patch us through for the past year and a half, state government has dipped into all kinds of different special funds that are supposed to be for one purpose or another, be it regulating doctors or any number of hundreds of things for which we have these special funds in Illinois. Transportation, as you say, has always been one that's gotten a lot of attention. It's one of the biggest ones. And so it's interesting, as the governor in the past has treated this money as fungible, that this would sort of carve out a big chunk of that and say, no, it's got to be used for transportation.
And you're listening to State Week in Review. That's Brian Mackey. Also on our panel, Amanda Vinicky and Ivan Marino of the Associated Press. I'm Sean Crawford. This week, we started to hear some rumblings, because it's only been about a week now that we were hearing that higher education would get some additional money this fiscal year. Rumblings going on now that there may be additional money beyond that this fiscal year for colleges and universities. Down at the State House Bureau, can you give us an update on that?
Yeah, so yesterday, the Senate actually passed a bill that would allocate an additional $454 million to colleges and universities. This would bring all of the higher ed institutions to 60% of the funding level that they were expected to receive this year. So this is in addition to the $600 million that lawmakers passed a couple of weeks ago. So it cleared the Senate with near unanimous support. Now it heads to the House to be considered as soon as next week when they come back. And so this money essentially would come from the state not repaying funds that it borrowed money from, like the school infrastructure fund or low-income energy assistance. And so the little opposition that was against this idea was that you're basically moving money from one pocket to the other, and people are not happy that essentially, you know, the state is just continuing to raid these other funds.
Well, right, because it's false new revenue. It's not actually new money. And in fact, you could think of it as money the state has already spent, because in cases, Illinois has borrowed, or taken money from these funds, just as it did earlier, what brought about this transportation constitutional amendment. And in this case, it's basically saying the state doesn't have to pay back the funds. So it's really just on paper. And yet you, I think, had a lot of legislators that were sore about the previous money that went to higher education, giving a greater percentage of funding, 60% versus 30% for the rest of the universities, to Chicago State University. And of course, there are, it was Chicago State that was out in front, really telling the story of the crisis that it was facing, talking about closure in a way that is unprecedented, really nationally. That's why it got traction in, you know, the New York Times. And also, of course, you have a different population there. It is the only university in the state that has a majority of minorities. And you had the Black Caucus really fighting for CSU. But the other universities, and of course, legislators who have had to wear the jacket for this impasse, particularly those from that represent universities are saying, hey, wait, this isn't enough. And even Eastern Illinois University saying, you know, we really need more. EIU and Western both also have, like CSU, having gone forward with layoffs during the 10 plus months they've been waiting for money. So the key test, I think, is going to be, though, is the House actually going to do anything? We didn't see the House move forward at all on getting money to social services, and senators, at least to me, appeared like they weren't sure that the House was going to do as they had done and in quick fashion send this extra boost to higher ed.
So colleges and universities shouldn't be prepared to spend that money anytime soon, right? You know, in advance, because right now this is still quite uncertain.
No, definitely not. And I think this is yet another situation where you have pressure building. We've talked for the better part of a year now about what are going to be the pressure points. Would it be the elementary schools not opening last fall? Well, the governor signed the education budget, so that happened. Would it be universities laying people off? Well, we've seen hundreds of people laid off from Eastern and Western and other universities in Illinois, and then Chicago State, even after getting 60% funding, still went ahead and laid off 300 people. A third of its workforce. And so I think some people in the Capitol are wary of taking the pressure off for getting an overall budget deal and really truly solving the problems of the fact that Illinois is spending far more money than it's collecting in tax revenue. And you need to solve that either by making deep, deep cuts or increasing taxes. And that's a conversation that, as we talked about earlier, it may be beginning to happen in closed doors, but we just don't know what the details and how far people are willing to go yet on those matters.
Well, it seemed not too long ago that there seemed to be a movement out there to provide money in much the same fashion that's been done, or this temporary bridge, as they call it, for higher ed funding to social service agencies, that those groups were going to get some type of money as well. Amanda, what's the latest with that? I know some of these social service agencies are now suing the state.
Right, Sean, there are some 64 agencies that say this has gone on long enough. They grouped together, got their boards on board, which is a difficult task, of course, as anybody who's perhaps served on one of those or knows what it's like to get build a consensus can imagine. But they say enough is enough. So I liked the headline that I believe was in Crane's, Governor Rauner, you've been served. But it is we did not see any action, as I noted, on actually getting money to these social services, and it wouldn't be enough. It would be $450 million spread across presumably scores of agencies. Ivan?
Yeah, no, and there's also this, I guess, another challenge here with these stopgap measures is that there's frustration building with lawmakers who think that the more you keep kind of stitching together budgets and putting these, you know, stopgap measures in place, it kind of removes the incentive to just implement the whole budget because there aren't you know, colleges closing or because, you know, social services get another lifeline. It just makes this standoff go on longer, and there are lawmakers who think that they should just focus on passing a full budget now.
And it's easy to say that, I guess, but if you're on the other end of that, if you're a college and a university or a social service group, I'm sure they want to see this certainty as well. They want to see a budget in place, but I'm sure they're sitting there thinking at this point, we'll take what we can get.
Oh, yeah. They're not in any position to turn money down, most certainly. But, you know, this is frustrating for all of these agencies, has been. And now you're seeing talk, all right, are they going to be able to do it? Will they meet this May 31st deadline? School administrators already trying to get out in front of the possibility that there won't be school funding and saying, how are we supposed to plan? We need to know. And so schools are saying this for next year. Of course, they were the only ones that got money in fiscal year 6. And so social service agencies and such also wondering, okay, what do we do now for next year. We could never have imagined back when there was talk of an impasse that it would go on this long, that we would have been in this position, that it would be so, nearly a year and still unresolved. So do they sign contracts with the state going forward? Are they going to have their federal grants now in jeopardy? There are so many questions. So no, Sean, they're not in any position to say no to any money coming through, but most certainly they recognize the political pressures that are at play.
And I would just add here, I think you made that phrase, Amanda, do they sign contracts in the future? It's not like these are businesses that can say, well, you know what, we handle child adoptions in Chicago, now we're going to take our business to Atlanta or something like that. I mean, these are organizations that do jobs that state government used to do in many cases, be it taking care of elderly people or disabled people or helping people who have addictions get treatment for those things. The state of Illinois decided a few decades ago that it was going to outsource a lot of these services and began writing contracts to private charity organizations, in many cases nonprofits, to do this work. And, I think it also bears mentioning that, the governor and his administration decided to issue these contracts. If they felt like Illinois was never going to have the money for this, then they probably shouldn't have issued the contracts. Unfortunately for the agencies, state contracts are always subject to appropriation. And because there has never been a law appropriating the money for this, it remains unclear whether they'll have legal grounds to stand on to say, well, we should get paid because we fulfilled our end of the contract, because the contract is subject to appropriation. Of course, Illinois is spending billions of dollars without any appropriation law in terms of paying state employees and many of the other things that have been ordered by courts, too. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out.
Well, if you're going to go to the Republican National Convention, which I guess is in Cleveland this year, don't look for Governor Bruce Rauner there. Don't look for Senator Mark Kirk. In fact, don't look for a lot of big-name Republicans. At least that's what we're hearing right now. Anybody can give me an update on what's going on there? Apparently, Governor Rauner's people say that he's not going.
Yeah, that's true. And I think what this highlights is this just growing trepidation from Republicans around the country about whether to get behind Donald Trump. And in Rauner's case, I think you could certainly make the inference that he's looking to November, and there's going to be a lot of important state legislative races that will determine whether Democrats have supermajorities in each chamber, certainly more than what they have now, that would allow them to basically pass whatever budget they want without any of Rauner's suggested reforms. So I think Rauner really wants to make sure that he does not hurt his brand or the brand of Republican lawmakers that he wants to make sure remain in the state house and ideally get a few more seats to make it more difficult for Democrats to basically run the show here.
And of course, Donald Trump did win the primary here, so he has delegates coming from Illinois. He was the most popular person on the Republican side. That's something. This is pretty unprecedented to watch, Brian.
Yeah, but I mean, I think Ivan's point was great, because this really is about down ballot races, I think, for the Republicans. Certainly, Senator Mark Kirk is viewed as one of the best opportunities that national Democrats have identified for helping them gain seats in the United States Senate. And let's remember that in the last general election here in Illinois in 2014, when Governor Rauner managed to become the first Republican elected governor in Illinois in 12 years, and there was all kinds of state legislative action, only one seat flipped in the entire legislature from Democrat to Republican. And that was in what is supposed to be a more favorable year for Republicans. So now you have presidential election year when the turnout more tends to favor Democrats, and you're potentially going to have a deeply, deeply unpopular, many would say unprepared candidate leading the top of the Republican ticket. And I think a lot of Republicans are looking at what that could do to their races and their colleagues, and they're getting very nervous.
Amanda, let me ask you, is there anybody in the legislature that is openly supporting Trump? I've not heard too much of that from the elected officials in the legislature.
I guess I'd hesitate to say, having not asked all 177 or anything, but I would agree with you that I haven't noticed. It's not as if we have gotten a press release or I've seen the tweets or anything as we watch them for members of the General Assembly that are active on social media that are out in front saying that Trump is their guy and standing up for him, or expressing frustration with the governor or Senator Kirk for not being fully on board. Really, what you're the most talk that I've heard from Trump out of Illinois is coming from Tammy Duckworth's campaign, who's trying, of course, the Democratic nominee for the U.S. Senate seat, and as her campaign is trying its very hardest to tie Kirk to Trump, a storyline that I'm guessing we will see continue for the next 6 months, although at least my inbox is already sick of it from both sides.
And then the Kirk campaign seems to be trying to tie her to Rod Blagojevich, which she did work in that administration. So Donald Trump versus Rod Blagojevich is really what we're going to hear when it comes to the U.S. Senate race this year.
Exactly. So, there you go. Look at the top of the ballot.
And for Kirk, does he benefit, I guess, by not being part of – I mean, it seems to me he has got to get Republican support. If he loses some Republicans who maybe favor Donald Trump with this strategy, does he have any chance at all?
You know, I think that is already we have seen some of the national prognosticators. Originally, this was supposed to be one of the most competitive races in the nation. And then it moved to could be Democratic. And now I believe it's moved from lean to probably Democratic. Really, Duckworth is seen right now as the favored candidate. But Kirk has positioned himself and done his utmost to portray himself as a moderate Republican, appealing to all bases, but you have a frustrated base. So I think that's where the same storyline that you hear so often in terms of a fractured party with Republicans nationally, you have here. And by not attending the convention, I mean, that's all the media goes. That is a time for a whole lot of headlines. The same reasons that both Kirk and Rauner are avoiding it also means that they are bypassing a lot of their opportunities. And this is, you know, supposed to have been Republicans, in a sense, time to shine. Their first time with a Republican governor in more than a dozen years. And instead of being in all of Rauner and all of his glory, it's the opposite.
Time now for our notes from the field. And Ivan Marino, let me start with you.
So I am following legislation right now that would set guidelines for how law enforcement here can use these so-called cell site simulator devices. These are devices that mimic cell towers so that they could track individuals' phones during phone investigations. The challenge with this technology is that in addition to just grabbing that one phone that they're after, it has the potential to get thousands of phone numbers in the area. So lawmakers here want to make sure that police have warrants to use them and that they're routinely purging data from basically people that were not involved in this investigation. And this is legislation that you are seeing pop up around the country right now.
Okay. Amanda?
Well, a lot of talk this week at the Capitol, but no action when it comes to changing the formula that sends money to schools. The sponsor of the plan that he says would make funding more equitable, that's Senator Andy Menar of Bunker Hill, says that back in February he'd sent numbers to the State Board of Education and just this week got them back in terms of what it would mean for actual specific districts. And there were a lot of legislators upset with what they saw. And then you saw amendments filed, changes in those numbers. One of the individuals who's trying to support this says that it was spreadsheet fatigue. So in the end, there were no actual votes, but it continues to be something that garners a lot of attention and is yet another element of budget negotiations.
Brian Mackey.
George Lucas has wanted to build a museum of narrative arts on the Chicago lakefront, but there's been a lot of opposition up there. The group Friends of the Park sued, and this week Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel says he's asking a federal appeals court to dismiss what he's calling a frivolous lawsuit. This comes as reports say Lucas and his wife could be looking to build the museum in another city, far, far away.
Okay, that will do it for today's State Week in Review. The members of our broadcast include Amanda Vinicky, Brian Mackey, and Ivan Marino with the Associated Press. You can get a podcast of this show by going to WUIS.org. The production assistance for our program today provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capital by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.